And we're live with our 295th episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. Super happy to be back, as always. Had a great episode last week. This week, you just get Ken and me, or me and Ken. Yeah. As we want to break down what's happened over the last month, just across the industry, being in Vegas, and our experience. Like, I'm interested to talk with Ken a little bit about his experience as well. Like, we did see a lot of each other. Brandon, you're right. Like, we haven't been on the live in a fair minute, just because life's gotten in the way, and Hacker Summer Camp especially gets in the way of a lot of things in August for us. But we're back today. There's a couple of things I did want to announce before we get into it, though. First of all, we will be doing training at Black Hat Europe in London, December 8th through the 11th, I think it is. This is a four-day training that is a combination of harnessing LLMs for application security and practical secure code review. This is a course specifically designed for Black Hat and for doing a deep dive into LLMs, security, how to actually implement those, how to build a SAST tool that you can use on your own, how to utilize LLMs and MCPs and all sorts of different things. So we're really excited to bring that course live. You can find details either at the Black Hat Europe website, or I think there's a link to it from training.absoluteappsec.com. Besides that, there's a couple of other conferences that I will be at in the near term. Number one is SaintCon. Like, that'll be in October. There we go. Ken found the Black Hat link for it, the secure code review, next gen secure code review, right? Like, because it's all about AI nowadays. And we're going to get into that here shortly. But other places that we're going to be, I'm going to be at SaintCon. That's the end of October. That's a local conference to me here in Salt Lake City or in Utah, like the wider valley. I'm helping run the AppSec community there. Also, like, some of the local B-Sides events that are going to be running in September and November. B-Sides Cache Valley, I think it is, and B-Sides Red Rocks, which is down in St. George near Vegas, but not quite all the way there. Ken, what does your schedule look like over the near term?
I'm flying back to Vegas tomorrow, as you know, to compete.
Well, your security
other schedule. Stuff. That's true. I know what you meant. I'm talking it out loud. I'm sorry. I have to think through it.
I know. You're good.
Then next month, probably, I think, like, there's a couple conferences, actually. Maybe HughesetCon, and then ETLS back in Vegas at the end of the month. I think both of those are towards the end of the month. I don't think I'm going to be doing LastCon. LastCon will come up, I think, September 23rd through 25th. So that's the other one. No. I don't know. No. So I'm sorry. LastCon is in October. Jeez. Yeah. So I think, like, next month is maybe those two conferences, HughesetCon and ETLS. And then, I know. Also, like, one other thing I was going to mention, because you had mentioned training, was, like, I have gotten, and I apologize, like, the last few weeks have been absolutely bananas. Actually, last month. And so people have reached out for training requests. And I just, like, if you've asked, I just, can you reach out again? sorry to ask that, but it's hard to go back through DM. So if you are interested in the course, Seth and I are considering putting one together in October. But we just need to know what the interest is again, because we've had people reach out for both courses that we offer. So in any case, that's everything, Seth. As far as I know, I mean, that brings me into, like, maybe October, and I think it might be a little bit of a, isn't there Global AppSec in November? Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yep. Global AppSec, DC, whatever it is, right?
Yeah. I submitted a talk, but once again, Denied.
mine
these days I'll get an OWASP approval.
Yep, mine didn't get picked up either for whatever reason this time around.
I think some of our viewers reminded us of why in Vegas. That's all right. Anyways, we'll move on.
We don't need to get into that. I am repping my DEF CON 33, you know, shirt I had to today because we're going to be talking about DEF CON and the experience that we had there. But yeah.
Because that we did have some good experiences.
Yeah. You know, like just a recap from the podcast perspective, and I think from you and I's perspective, we had multiple kind of community events that we ran. There was one on the worst security party, right? Like worst, I guess, security party at Hofbräuhaus on Wednesday night, where we had quite a few people that were there, but that was a little bit more business focused and kind of startup focused. But a lot from Redpoint and from Dry Run and customers, potentials, and all that kind of stuff. But it was a good time, right? Like listeners to the podcast were there as well. Like there's quite a few people that that made it seemed like a really good time. And then we had the just kind of the happy hour event, like get together on Thursday night, where we saw people that we didn't see Wednesday night as well, right? Like, you know, there was quite a few that came out and we just went to a bar, Yard House, had food, way too much food, and some drinks, right? That was a good time. I don't know what was,
you said
what
way
was
too your much impression food. Of those Everybody things? Gave me garbage about those appetizers, man. I'm telling you, sorry, I fed you all too well. You can get upset about it. Nah. that was funny. We did end up, sorry, for those who weren't there, we ended up with a ridiculous amount of appetizers and various foods and drinks. But it was a fun time. It was really good to see everybody. We handed out a lot of stuff. Like I felt good that we were able to hand out a bunch of t-shirts and socks and stickers and, you know, give back to the community that's given a bunch to us. So, you know, just to show that appreciation and spend time with people. And it was awesome. I mean, it's hard to go through all the names of folks that were there, but, you know, like Paul was there, Jen, Kyle was there. Larry, Leisure Suit Larry was there. Everybody was there Juan was there. You know, a lot of folks that you see in the chat were there. So it was really, really neat. We took some photos. We did also do an AppSec panel. So we did an absolute AppSec panel and we've got the recordings. I've got like the audio and the two different video at least formats. So I got to stitch those up and edit those and we'll release the full panel. But it was Tanya and Jason Haddix. Just very, very, very cool. Got to hear their perspectives on things. I'm trying to think what else. I did those two pod activities for AppSec, the AppSec Village, which is, it's always really, really fun. If anybody is not familiar with how it works, like you've got pod activities and you've got workshops, at least at DEF CON. And so with the AppSec Village, the way it's structured is, you know, you can, and Andrew Wilson was there, right? Like he's in the Slack.
Yeah.
He's been on the podcast. He's a friend. He was there giving a workshop, very well attended workshop, but that's more of a, what you think of with a workshop, right? You're going to learn some things. There's going to be some activities to follow along with all that. Whereas pod activities, it's, you get basically like people constantly rotating through, right? Every 5 to 10 minutes, new people coming through. So you have to do like whatever activity it is, it has to be very focused and very short. You saw how it went. That's what the AppSec Village offers. Besides that, I think they offer talks, they had coffee. It was nice. It was really well done. And I don't know, what was your thoughts on the AppSec Village inside of DEF CON?
I thought it was well done, right? There was some... it was good to see like all the different activities that were ongoing. Jerry Gamblin spoke as well, talking about CVEs as he does, right? Always an interesting discussion and topic. And I think I mentioned it on the podcast, like his recently released, I can't remember what he called the site, but you know, basically shaming CNAs for not reporting like actual good data with their CVEs, right? Like doing a full breakdown on, you know, how many of these actually have like reference data and everything that you need to make good decisioning about CVEs when they come out. That was good. The podcast episode, or like the panel, I guess we should say, because we didn't push it out as an episode since there was technical difficulties, as there always is, was really good. Always interesting to hear Jason and Tanya's views on things, right? Because I know they differ. Like, you and I talk all the time, and sometimes it feels like we're of one mind when it comes to AppSec and ProdSec stuff, because we collaborate so much. But interesting to get a bug bounty professionals, or, you know, where Jason came from, right? Like, in the bug bounty world, what he sees on a day-to-day basis is definitely different, right? And same with Tanya. You know, she's been at SemGrep, but it sounds like she's breaking out to do more training stuff, and more of a developer advocate, coming at things from a different perspective than you and I do.
She announced her departure. I forgot about that. Yeah.
I don't want to take the take any of the topics away from that podcast or from that panel. So I think that's about all I'll say on it. But we will release that, and I think we'll chop it up and release some shorter clips from the panel as well. It will be on the AppSec Village's YouTube channel at some point, the full thing as well. So it's just a matter of us actually getting the time. That's always the problem, of getting the time to put all that stuff together.
Well, I have unlimited time.
If you just don't sleep. Yeah.
Yeah, but I just don't never sleep, which was what happened for 7 days in Vegas. Like, that was 3 hours. I was trying to explain to somebody, I'm like, the most sleep I ever had was like 4 hours, and it was broken up one night, but it was 4 hours. After that, it was 3 hours every night for 7 days. I mean, it's like, that damage that does to you. Like, you said it when you got on, you're like, today I'm recovered. I'm finally
recovered this last weekend. Yeah. 2 weeks after, yeah. Right. The events. Yeah.
Someone brought up a good point that they push oxygen. Yeah. And I don't know if this is true, but they were saying that they push oxygen into those casinos, but also into your room. So that's why it's hard to sleep. And that would make a lot of sense. Cause I had even on the nights we could sleep, like, I could get to sleep, I couldn't get to sleep. It was just, I thought it was just because I was stuck in that not sleeping mode, but maybe it's that. Anyways, all right. Sorry. Other more important things, not sure than that.
I was going to ask, right, like, outside of that.
And I have a question for you too. So
What else did you get to that you were... that you were impressed about, that you were interested in? I mean, I know you were really like quite business focused and business heavy, right? Like, you're like, they were monopolizing your schedule, you know, from a promotion perspective. So I don't know if you actually like had much time to look at talks or other things.
Nope. I don't think I got to a single talk. I tried to go hit the vendor booth area just to get a look at what people were doing. And I went and looked at the merch, and yeah, just other than that, it was pretty, but that was my question for you, because, all right, you've been like, I don't know if people know, but you've been basically going to DEF CON since virtually the beginning, right? And with that, you've seen it evolve and change. You've seen the ticket prices go from like $80 or $40 or wherever it was to like what it is now. It's like 500. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was probably $20 when you started, but now it's like, or a nickel. No, I'm joking, sorry. No more age jokes. All right. Except for I'm gonna keep doing it. But so then you've seen it change. You've seen, and so this year, you know, this was a little bit different because this is the Las Vegas Convention Center. I mean, clearly there has to be a difference in the feel, right? And so I was curious, like, what is your perspective on the evolution of DEF CON?
Since you've been going. Evolution of DEF CON.
And how did this year with the convention center versus the other stuff?
This is the second year in the convention center. One of the things I do appreciate about being at the convention center is having everything under one roof. As painful as it is at times to get over to it and to get to the space, you know, everybody's staying like all over the place in Vegas, but all having it all under one roof actually brings back some of the like the cool vibe of I'm able to actually get to multiple things within a reasonable amount of time and actually see some things. The space allows for more people to be in talks. Yes, there's always going to be lines for talks, right? Like that's happened since probably the second or third DEF CON that I actually attended. There was always a line to actually get in, even when it was only, 300 people that were attending the conference, just given space constraints. You know, you had to kind of plan ahead to actually get into things, especially the popular talks. But now that there's so much to do, it feels like you can spend your time, and this has been the case for a number of years, but you can spend your time on a myriad of activities that don't necessarily have to do with just sitting and consuming someone else's research, right? The hands-on activities have gotten way better. Think about it from like what you were doing at the AppSec Village, right? Like the hands-on like card game activity, actually recognizing some things, you know, wandering over to the AI Village or going into, the cybersecurity challenge and talking with people about what they were actually doing with AI and with automation. Like those sorts of things are kind of are unique and that have grown up at DEF CON and then have spread to other conferences. This idea that you go to a conference, you have like hands-on activities that are actually helping you do that. Now, some of what the detriment there is, just being able to choose what you want to actually attend and go to. Like, what is it that's valuable to you? It's really hard to navigate when we're talking about, I think in Hacker Tracker this year, we had something like 1,300 separate events, ranging from 20 to 30 minute talks to the trainings that last for 2 days, right, or 4 days, and so each of those different events can make it very difficult to choose, and you almost have paralysis on what is it that I actually want to do, and what is it that's going to be useful to me, because even though a talk is popular, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to apply to you in your day-to-day. So you may get in a line, wait for 2 hours, get into a talk and realize 10 minutes in or 5 minutes in that it is not something that you're really interested in and it's time to bail. But at least there's something else going on, right, that you can attend.
Well, and everybody says the same thing about like, oh, you can watch the talks later, so.
Mm-hmm. You say that, but there's also something pretty invigorating on some of the like research topics about being there when they actually, announce some of that stuff, when they actually like dig in and give their take and some of the questions that can be answered, interacting with other attendees and the speaker in that format. You don't always have that ability. I go back to it, and like one of my favorite memories about attending Black Hat and DEF CON was actually the year that RFP basically Rainforest Puppy basically just gave up, right? And gave his talk that I'm done, right? Like he just called it, right? And he'd been a mainstay of the community for a number of years, and trying to get vulnerability disclosure working, like this was, again, I'm dating myself, but pre-bug bounty days, like by a decade, if not more, right? RFP, I think it was a great thing to actually see. And the LCOM stuff that went on at DEF CON when the feds showed up and arrested what's his bucket, right?
Oh.
Like being there for that sort of
how can I forget that? Yeah, I know. And actually recently he was doing something cool in the news.
Dmitry Skylarov, right? But that was 2001. Yeah. Anyway, I can't remember what his handle is, but it's Dmitry Skylarov, because he was at DEF CON presenting and they showed up and they hauled him away to jail for breaking the Adobe encryption and what I mean, like there was, so being there for some of this stuff is pretty fascinating, right? And seeing it happen in action. And then also the support, right? Like there's not a lot of places, who was it we were talking, oh, it was Andrew that we were talking to about this, right? There's not a lot of places that you or I can go where we can talk to people that understand, like, I mean, that's part of why we started the podcast, but, you know, in a group setting, like just around drinks or whatever, talking to people that understand what we do on a day-to-day basis and have like real in-depth discussions about it is a great thing. I just like, it's nice to be part of a group at some point, right? Like we're humans, we're social animals, even if we claim that we're not, and that we're, you know, all isolated, having that understanding from a peer makes me more excited about getting back into things. Mm. And I know when we were in Vegas this year, like I was pretty negative, right? I'll be honest. Like I was having a hard time feeling motivated.
Actually, you might have felt that way, but I think you, because for just knowing you as long as I have. By the way, I thought you meant Marcus Hutchins earlier, by the way, of 2017.
No, this was
you said 2001, 16 years before that. So no, actually, I think you were just tired, frankly. You just seemed, but people don't realize, because you say it to me, but you don't really say it outside of, like, there is quite a bit of work that you're kind of doing, especially like with Hacker Tracker maintaining. By the way, that was something that was so cool, because I will just say on your behalf, I'm going to promote you for a second, because I thought this was so fucking cool. Like I walk up, I'm trying to get my human badge, and, you know, I'm sitting there and people are asking questions. I'm kind of in like a QA area. They set me to the side because I had badge issues they were trying to figure out. And I just keep hearing people say to each other like, oh yeah, no, you should go look on Hacker Tracker at this or Hacker Tracker that. And I'm like, all right, this is weird. Finally get the badge, start walking. I hear Hacker Tracker, Hacker Tracker, Hacker Tracker. I see all these signs for Hacker Tracker. And I'm like, my buddy just did this as like a hobby. And like, now look at this thing. I mean, you got big banners. Everyone's talking about, I'm just like, anyways. And then you told me this, the stats, which I won't share, but it's very, very high. A lot of users using Hacker Tracker. And I was just like, anyways, I was impressed for you. So I'm going to brag on you as your friend for a moment. That was really, thanks, really cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to see, right? Like given all the blood, sweat and tears that have gone into it over the years.
I don't think you're negative. I think you're just overwhelmed with, you know, running a company, having, you know, have a community we try to interact with. You've got Hacker Tracker, you've got your goon responsibilities, or you get a sweet hotel in the Riviera. The Rio, that's what I mean. Yes. Riviera doesn't exist anymore. They knocked that down. Yeah, the Rio.
I'm sure they would have put us up at the Riv still if they could, right?
They could, yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm sure that. I that's definitely part of it, right? Like, because going into it, right? Like, all of our work as, like, Hacker Tracker goons, just, you know, peeling back the curtain a little bit, is done before the conference, right? Like trying to get new versions out, make sure the data is actually aggregated. Shout out to, you know, Drew, like a null value on that, like all the work that he does, trying to get all the villages and communities to give him schedules so we can put it in there, and like wrangling, like even dealing with other people on the DEF CON, you know, volunteers and staff as they're trying to like manage the conference. It is a huge headache. And running a conference of this magnitude, I don't think people realize what that actually looks like.
There were criticisms of DEF CON, but I was going to ask you, because I never even got a chance to talk this through with you, that one of their big criticisms, I saw photos of like, they're like, oh, it's Line Con, there's lots of lines. But the thing is, I never actually experienced that. And I think, I suspect that's because I didn't go early. You know, I kind of went on Friday at I think it was maybe, you know, midday, probably mm-hmm. when I showed up. So I didn't experience really any of that. Did you see that? Or what were the lines for? Was it to get into talks, or was that to register? Because when I got to registration, there was virtually no one involved.
Yeah, registration, they've actually figured out more year over year. And I know that was always the thing is, oh, we're going to go to LineCon and sit in registration overnight. And they still allow people to do that, but it's not necessary anymore. It's not, right, like you're going to get a badge, right? Like you're going to be able to buy a badge, whether that's cash or if you do it pre-con, you know, you put on a card, whatever that is, to DEF CON communication. The biggest line that we're still seeing from a, you know, back of house perspective is at merch, like people that want to buy merch. Part of this is because Thursday, there isn't anything else going on, right? Like they start some of the workshops, I believe, on Thursday. But those are pre-registered. So only people that have pre-registered are can go to the workshops. So they don't run tracks on Thursday. It's just when registration opens. And the only other thing that's open is merch. So people go stand in the merch line. And as much as people complain, right? Like, and we have all these stats, because again, that's another thing that's in Tacker Tracker now. Like you can pick the merch that you want in the app, and then you scan your QR code once you get up to the front so they can actually go pick the order. The tracking this year, I think the longest the merch line got was 4 to 5 hours, right? That's still pretty long, right? But given that last year it was 7 to 8 hours at the longest, they're improving things, right? There's like little improvements that we continue to do to try to speed up that process. I know people will complain about, you know, I don't want to go into it too much, but, you know, people complain about like the process and wanting to be able to pick it out and order it and just have it delivered. But then we've got the staunch DEF CON crowd that doesn't want to, you know, use a credit card, that doesn't want people to know that they were there and wants to be able to pay, purchase things with cash. And so it's a strange crowd to actually serve. And I don't think people understand that, because you've got extremes of people that are coming from the corporate side where everything is covered by their corporate card and they don't care, to people that are there on their own dime and don't want anyone to know that they are attending a, you know, counter conference, right? Like a counterculture conference. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. I will just add my own last statement here on this, saying like, I actually liked it being in that space because of what you said, everything's in one spot, but also it was very easy to navigate. There were plenty of facilities for everything, you know, water fill stations, a food court, restrooms, you know, plenty full resources. So, I mean, charging state, like there's, and well, anyways, yeah, I won't go into that one, but lots of cool things there. And it was nice, I felt, but I was confused in past years. Because there was a year where it was actually hosted at the Rio, if I'm not mistaken, if my memory's not too, and that was like kind of all under one little banner, and that was nice. But then, since then in the Riviera, it's been, yeah, like with Caesars really spread out and hard to find stuff. So anyways, I just thought it was nice. On our end, it was nice. But yeah, I speaking of the corporate side, it was tough because I had, like you said, my schedule was so booked up the first couple days with the Black Hat turnover to DEF CON and doing all the sales related conversations and meetings and such, that, you know, that those 2 days were just a wash. And then Friday and Saturday were like work. And then we also had the events going at night for all these things. And there's a lot. So, you know, good times, but man, a lot.
Yep. A lot. Right. For sure. So, yeah. Andrew's saying he's a
big I did. Sorry. I did want to say something about the Rivian. That was cool. Like the Rivian where you could like break into it and win it.
Oh yeah. I didn't actually get into Car Hacking Village, so I didn't necessarily see that. Like I said, there's so much to actually get to. I'm not surprised. But yeah, I like stuff. And that's what I'm saying is there's a lot of stuff to be inspired by when you go there, right? Like any of those villages you stumble into, even if you don't know what they're necessarily doing, usually have some sort of activity that you can jump into. They usually are giving some fairly technical talks that are somewhat relevant to you on a day-to-day basis, whether personally or professionally. And then the fact that you can go at something like a Rivian and try to break into it, you can, you know, see what approaches people are using to do that sort of thing. Super interesting, right? Like same thing, like Bug Bounty Village, AI Village, AppSec Village. That's where I spent majority of my time, was kind of spread between those three. I did pick up like Kettle's talk on like HTTP/1.1 must die. I think we've had discussions on that, so I won't dig into it too much. But there is always good research that's coming out, right? Like people hold their research. And that's what we see these couple of weeks after DEF CON as well. And I did want to speak to this. There's like a lack of new research being dropped, right? It feels like there's just all of this pre-DEF CON buzz that happens, right? Like all of this new research is going to be released. We're going to have all of these talks and these new techniques. And then we hit DEF CON. It's all released. People are trying to digest what actually happens. And the news cycle just seems to drop after that. From a security research perspective, like there, we haven't seen a lot of new stuff actually come up. We did see some clarifying articles. I did want to give a shout out to Kettle and Portswigger on this one, right? Like, I think this this was mentioned in TLDRSec as well, but this has been needed for a while for anyone that's doing security testing using Burp. There is this article that Kettle has released that's basically what is like the difference between HTTP pipelining and request smuggling, right? So we get a lot of false positives back from Burp, just as an aside, right? And I know, Ken, you and I didn't necessarily talk about this one, but I did want to bring it up before we move on to some of the other articles this week. If you're testing using Burp Suite, you often get these request smuggling findings from the product that actually says, yeah, from Burp, right? That says, hey, it looks like you have request smuggling that's going on here. And it's usually HTTP pipelining. There's a reason that that happens. And I think there's been enough pushback and enough requests back to Kettle that he has actually released an article helping people understand the difference between what pipelining is versus what request smuggling is. So if that's something that you're running into, this is the resource that you can jump on for that. I know we've been talking about it internally at Redpoint because that is something that we have run into multiple times. I actually don't think that we've ever successfully seen a request smuggling exploit come out of Burp Suite at this point, right? It's always been HTTP pipelining, and we've had to spend cycles actually tracking this down because it does show up as a vulnerability when in fact it may not be. So you've got to, you know, there's some clarification that's happening there, which will improve things for us all over time.
Yeah, I'm kind of catching up to what a connection locked request is, but it makes sense. Like you initiate the first time with the client, but then the server maintains an upstream connection and it's locked in that state. And to re-trigger the request smuggling, you've got to activate the client again to make another request off to that server to just basically ride that already existing locked upstream request smuggling connection. Mm-hmm. That's a mouthful. This is a good, anyway, sorry, while you were talking, I was just kind of breaking it down, reading it. It's like, yeah, this is nice. Okay, cool. So this is pretty common. I don't do a lot of dynamic stuff anymore. So for me, it's like, is this common occurrence?
So I think it's a common occurrence, especially in a production setting where you have multiple infrastructure components that are all communicating. You've got reverse proxies that are in place. You're using Cloudflare, maybe some Nginx reverse proxies, maybe some caching systems or some sort of web application firewall that's doing the same thing, right? Like any of those components, right? Like that's where it'll start to come into play. When I'm doing dynamic assessments of typically like staging sites where they don't have that full infrastructure in place, it's very rare for us to actually run into this. Just because it isn't like, it's not a full production infrastructure that's serving, you know, millions of requests a second or whatever it is. So there's not necessarily the need to drop something like that behind, you know, a full pipeline of infrastructure components to handle that sort of load, which is where this stuff starts to shine and where you really start to find these sorts of vulnerabilities. And that's that, to be frank, and I know I've told you this before, like this is my complaint about some of these findings and some of these issues that pop up, is that Burp Suite specifically will identify these things when, as a tester, right, like, or we're looking at custom code, this isn't necessarily something that the developers put into place. It's all about the infrastructure that is in front of the application that's serving up that code or that application to its users. So it is application security, but it's not necessarily like custom like DAS stuff that we see that often.
Yeah. I never run into it. So no, I remember when this all just first, came about, was shocked that this was even the scale that it is a problem. And when James came on the podcast and sort of clarified things, it was fairly interesting. Yeah,
it is. It is. And like, you know, there's a lot of different aspects that go into application security. I think, you know, we all know that. So it is something you've got to be concerned about, especially if you're running application security for a larger corporation or you're an IC. When I'm looking at custom code or you're doing like, you know, secure code review stuff or dynamically, it's probably not something that you're going to be as involved in or won't be as relevant to you. So that being said, though, like we did want to talk a little bit about the, not necessarily the advent, but the takeover of AppSec by AI. I know it's something that we mentioned, you know, before we got on the podcast, trying to find articles that were just back to the basics and Crocs and socks.
I don't think people understand, like, we're trying not to talk about AI.
Yeah. Yeah, like this is absolute AppSec, right? Like it's not absolute AI sec or absolute AI AppSec. That being said, it is fairly relevant to everything that we're seeing nowadays, right? Like every application that I've tested over the last 6 months, well, maybe not everyone, but a significant portion has AI components in it. Just like that is the new feature that everybody's dropped in there. You look at the latest TLDR sec from Clint, and he has a whole section that just is about MCP security and all the ways that MCP is failing. Because we've introduced a new API with access to all of the data behind those behind those data sources, and haven't necessarily put the controls in place, and all of a sudden the AI has access to things that it shouldn't have access to, right? Like that sort of thing is happening all across the industry.
Yeah, but when you look at, and actually I was just, we always chat while we're on the podcast a little bit in Slack, and I was chatting with Brian Glass, and he was talking about, you know, how like AI is, it's when you, I won't say the conference or the whatever, but like, or the organizers, but when you look at the talks, you know, and it's an AppSec conference, most of them are AI in the title, right? And then when we were at the AppSec Village at DEF CON, I mean, how much of that was centered around AI? I get it, because I mean, obviously, that's my life. It's been my life since I started Dry Run. But it's not, you know, the only thing I care about with AppSec, and you just can't get away from it. And I see why. You know, it is like, we've said it, I've said it, you said it. Yeah, it's changing everything. Just period, like everything about what we do, it just is. But
yeah,
you can't get away from it right now. Yeah, AI has taken over the Web3 conversation, which took over the blockchain chain conversation. But here's why I feel like it's different. I feel like it's a little different though. Like I get, because Brandon's not wrong. Brandon's absolutely right. It's just that in this case, AI is impacting on a huge scale development. Whereas like Web3 and blockchain was more of like, you know, there were companies that cropped up and there were solutions that cropped up. And then there was a lot of like fraud and things of that nature. So that made a lot of hype news when, you know, billions of dollars goes missing. You know, lots of that. And then also like a lot of the, with the blockchain, you know, I think you said it best, it was a solution looking in search of a problem rather. So they're like, whereas with AI, it's like, well, no, it's here. It's changing the velocity that we're shipping. It's changing how SDLCs work. It's changing how security teams and every other team is responding from QA to AppSec to whatever. You know, it's we even have like team members now, they're AI agents, right? So like one of the articles that we have queued up is one where we talk about how you can co-pilot all the things between issues and PRs and their VS code, but then how that leads to like RCE and exfiltration of secrets and things of that nature. So like this one's a little different in that it is actually already here. It's already impacting things. It's both improving security tooling. It's also ruining security practices to some degree.
Right? Like, and yeah, I
you know, I don't know if I should say that, but yeah.
No, you absolutely should, right? Like it has become a mainstay of the, you know, the discussions that we have on a weekly basis. Right? Like it feels like we touch on AppSec, we touch on like, you know, the Crocs and Socks of security, but then we also touch on AI every single week, whether it's intentional or unintentional, because of the influence that it's having. Whereas when it was IoT, when it was blockchain, yes, we would bring that up from time to time because it was, you know, such a mainstay in the hype cycle or in marketing efforts, right? Like same thing with kind of zero trust and some of these other concepts that the marketers had gleaned onto or glommed onto, whatever you want to call it. Whereas AI has like all of these, it's kind of multifaceted in how it's being used, how it's being attacked, how it's being defended, and how it's being just introduced and changing the way that we go about producing software. That's why it's, I feel like that's the main reason that we can't get away from it. Right. I'm with you basically, right? Like it has changed the development landscape, and, similar to, you know, some of the new languages as they started to pop up, or languages like becoming more and more approachable by people that weren't computer scientists, drove like web adoption, that drove mobile adoption. Now we have AI that's going to drive even more development and even more code that's going to have to be secured. And yeah, all I'm saying is I don't think we're out of a job, right? Like, you know, anytime soon.
Yeah. And I did want to just say, like, since, because like, okay, I think I see a lot of corollaries between the early days with like SQL injection and AppSec that we now see with like prompt injection and whatnot. And obviously SQL injection was RFP, who you mentioned. So on that, of that note, I thought I'd give credit to who I could find was publicly listed as the person who coined the phrase prompt injection, Simon Willison, I believe I said that correctly. But the reason I'm also putting up their blog posts is they've actually got some really cool technical security things they walk through with these types of systems, AI systems. So neat stuff.
That's excellent. Good stuff that's on there for sure. There's never enough time to read it all. Crocs, Socks, and Bots. So we need a new sticker of a bot wearing Crocs and Socks. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we do. Yeah, I do owe some t-shirts to some people too. I know I promised. There was also something that really cool that came out of the AppSec Village, which I think is really neat we should not skim over, is that, you know, in the talk we had some big company. I won't say who the companies are, because I think when I say big companies, I mean like FANG companies at the talk. And somebody had asked about something about securing vibe coding and things of that nature. And, you know, I had said, I'd heard about people using like cursor files and cloud files to sort of help put in guardrails. But then there's also other efforts to help corral vibe coding related development, right? And but that I didn't like know it. You did. Nobody on the panel were like intimately aware of those efforts and involved in them or anything like that. And I had asked, if you are, can you like, if you're trying to do that, can you like come up and talk or whatever, right? And then what was really cool was a couple of FANG companies come up and they say, well, we're trying to figure that out and we're working on that right now. And another one came up like, we're working, and then they start talking, and just right in front of us emerged like a, well, we should form a
working group.
To like, I'm like, yes, yes, you should form a working group. So it was really cool to like, this is one of the best parts of running this podcast is just the community connections that we're able to create. So anyways, that was really neat and really rewarding. And I hope I'm going to follow up. I actually, let me make a note to follow up with them, but I've been meaning to follow up and see how that's going, and maybe even, you know, like bring these folks on once they've got something to show. For how they're tackling this within their companies and like what standards will fall out of that.
Yeah.
And similarly, if anybody listening is doing this, reach out. We'll try and connect all of you together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, no promises, but we'll do what we can.
Yep. See what we can actually put together and like get people in touch that are working on similar problems. So we're not all in a developing a solution in a vacuum. And then, you know, announcing that solution at like next DEF CON when, you know, three or four people are doing the same thing, may as well work together on it. Cool. Yeah. What else do you want? We got about 15 minutes left today, Ken. What else do you want to talk through? Right. Like, do you want to talk about Orange Size article? Do you want to jump
in? Yeah. Let's do some old school AppSec. Let's do something a little different. I don't want to talk about AI for a bit. I'm sick of it.
Sick of it.
It's in my face every day.
So I did, like, if you were at DEF CON and you, and I know you didn't pick up your, you know, physical copy of Frack, right? Like, they printed these. You should have. I mean, this takes me back to the day, you know, the days of, yeah. Anyway. Me on BBS's downloading Frack as, you know, our counterculture, right? Like, you know, it was one of the things that we would pull down from the different BBS systems, right? But they're still going, right? Frack, I mean, this is number 72. Specifically, this article is from Orange Tsai. You may recognize that name. You should, right?
If you don't, you need to get familiar with Orange Tsai.
Orange Tsai, yes. Because he's done quite a bit. He's been very active in the bug bounty community for a number of years, but he's also been very active in just vulnerability disclosure and found some really, really cool things. One of the podcasts that we did, I can't remember when it was, he had a bunch of stuff I found in Apache. I want to say recently, but you know, that was it was you and me talking about it. And when that actually happened, I don't remember, but he has an article in Frack, specifically around PHP. I know you perused it. What were your thoughts on it? Like, what he actually talked through?
Yeah. So obviously there's too much content in there for us to go over on the podcast, but just to set the stage for what it is, essentially Orange Tsai has been doing this, he's been hacking, I think he said 18 years in that post. And what this is a sort of, and I should say too, like, yes, Orange Tsai is a very prolific bug bounty hunter. At GitHub, we were so happy to have him on as a private or as a researcher. And he, he's posted, you know, all kinds of articles about the things that he's done. And some of those were on GitHub. Many of those were on other platforms. The ones on GitHub were just so cool. How he's really good at chaining exploits. So just really, really skilled. And as part of that, has done a ton of CTFs throughout his career. Anyway, so what he's doing here is he kind of walks through, you know, some of his own exploits, like PHP things that he's seen and like classic PHP exploits in CTFs. And then he walks through like other just sort of, you know, bugs that are very interesting that pop up throughout CTFs in PHP. And I can say, like, from my own experience, like, those are, whenever I see a PHP system in a CTF, I'm really stoked. You know, some of the most fun ones we've had are like the LFI, RFI style issues where you can like put a web shell, you know, on the PHP app and then start actually having command execution via a nice pretty web shell. Lots of other fun stuff that you can do. But anyways, this is sort of a retrospective and it's just a fun article to read. You just get all these cool hacks in there, basically.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of this goes back to simple mistakes that people or that developers make, right? So, and like, this is one of the things I appreciate about CTFs, is that it really highlights the sorts of mistakes that developers will make in code, and distills them down to something usually fairly simple to exploit, right? Now, it's not always easy to find or easy to figure out the format in which you have to exploit that, but at the very least, you know that there is a vulnerability that exists. You know that there's a way to go at it, and it's unlocking the puzzle, the CTF designer's puzzle, in approaching that exploit, right? And so, like, you know, like you said, you know, PHP is a mainstay in CTFs for that reason, as it's fairly easy to actually represent some of the mistakes that developers make, and it can be reliably executed, right? Once you actually figure out how it's put together, right? So he goes on and explains some of these, like emulators and other things, PHP, right? Like reviving forgotten bugs, right? Like things that may or may not actually be a problem, arbitrary objects, right? Like that sort of thing becomes very interesting, right? And like learning new ways to approach looking at code and looking at kind of these like basics of securities or basics of security through CTFs is a good approach for any noob or any like junior to actually take, because it does actually introduce you to these core concepts of picking apart of application, finding these edge cases, and then exploiting an edge case.
Well, yeah, like this, one of the first ones is like, or I don't know if it's the first one. Hold on, sorry. Well, maybe it's a little farther down, but they talk about like what I mentioned, LFI, but then like how LFI prevention was introduced. But then they share like using filters to bypass the LFI, you know, protections to then use. And so filters essentially allow you to run operations, right? So they do like base 64 encoding, they do some other decoding. And then at the end of the day, you're able to bypass this LFI using these filters. And then there's a second follow-up to it where it's like, okay, and then the next level, they started to block that. And then, yeah, we had like arbitrary file read access through another way of using filters and chaining them together. And I don't know, like, this is the kind of stuff that's just like, I love it. This is classic AppSec, you know, software security stuff. It's just fun.
Yeah. I really just need to crack it open and go through all of it, because it's all interesting. Yeah. Basics, right? Like, you know, make sure that I, you know, recognize everything else that's actually gone into it, right? Deserialization attacks. Yeah. It's all good stuff. So if you haven't, go review that. If you want a copy of Frack, I know they're going to actually print and send people copies if you want a copy of it. Don't go out and buy one on, you know, eBay or whatever it is, unless you specifically have to have the one from DEF CON. I'm sure people are actually like paying too much for it. So, sweet. Well, we've been going for not quite an hour, Ken. Is there anything else that you want to, you know, review before we call it today?
No, it's cool. I'll give you your time back, as give we say. I love that one. That's one of my favorite ones. No, it's just, you know, just sort of getting back into the groove. This feels nice to just honestly just kind of get back into the groove of things. I know, is there anything else we need to mention before we hop off? I'll just mention it again in case somebody didn't hear the first part. We might We might put on a course in October virtually, but it does depend on people reaching back out who reached out before and letting us know which course that you would like to see. Because both Seth and I have gotten people coming to us, but that happened during this last month. And like this last month is just insane for both of us. So sorry, pretty bad at keeping track this last month of those requests. So anyways, make them again. Besides that, I don't know, like I'm just sort of excited to be back into the groove of things. My work is going well, so that's nice. It's really seeing a groundswell. It's like everybody realizes this now. There's a better way. Now it just comes down to like, I love it. Thank you. That's a great one. That's a great one. If you're listening, you can't see. Like it looks like Seth came up with some AI generated crocsots and bots image. I love it.
Yep. Yeah. That's shout out to Aaron on that. He's listening and he just whipped it up. Right. But yeah. Cracking me up.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Anyway.
Crocsots and bots.
Yeah. Yes. Patent pended. There we go, Brandon. Exactly. Please reach out, right? Like if you haven't joined the community, please do so. Like that's one of the best parts about us doing the podcast. I really appreciate talking to Ken on a weekly basis. It forces us to have, some communication as we get really busy. But that is one of the things, and I didn't mention this about Las Vegas, that is the best part, is seeing people that we don't necessarily see on a day-to-day basis. And yeah, the connections and relationships and the conversations that are had there. The hallway con is why I go back, right? Year after year. There's interesting stuff, but the hallway con is definitely it.
Yeah, just agreed. Yeah, yep. It was awesome. That's
so
the best.
Join Slack, right? Thanks, Brandon. Yeah, appreciate having you. Thanks for listening. And thanks, everybody, for joining today in Slack and on YouTube and other places. And otherwise, we will see y'all next week.
All right.